Good morning, Barbados. Welcome to Brass Tacks Sunday for May 31st. I'm Sanka Price, your moderator for today's program, in which we discuss the pros and cons of the Barbados Optional Savings Scheme, or what they call the BOSS Plan. We will seek to discover if BOSS is a good way for public servants to save money while contributing to this country's recovery after COVID-19, or if it is really a pay cut by another name. To give us their perspective on this, we will shortly get on the line Dr. Kevin Greenidge, the Senior Economic Advisor to government, retired banker, diplomat, and of course, former Brass Tacks host, Mr. Tony Marshall, president of the Barbados Cooperative Credit Union League, Hallie Haynes, and a little later, the president of the Bankers Association, Donna Wellington, is scheduled to join us as well. Now, with a panel like this, we should have an enlightening discussion brought to you, of course, with the compliments of Williams Industries, Inc. For Williams Surprise, big or small, Williams Metals, we have it all.
Angles, flats, cement and doors, lumber, windows and much, much more. Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board, and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form play for boxing.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Tack Sunday. I'm Sanka Price. Our producer and technical guru today is Mr. Dennis Johnson. His will be the first voice you'll hear when you call us at 4341790 to participate in the show. As always, those who prefer to communicate via WhatsApp can do so at 266-4862. For those now joining us, our topic is the pros and cons of the proposed Barbados Optional Savings Scheme, or BOSS Plan. Our guests are Dr. Kevin Greenidge, the Senior Economic Advisor to Government, retired banker, diplomat, and former Brass Tacks host, Mr. Tony Marshall, and president of the Barbados Cooperative and Credit Union League, Mr. Hallie Haynes. A lot has been said about BOSS over the last few days, so in an effort not to be repetitive, and to get most of this session, because you know today we only go until 1:15, I want to get straight into it with looking at an overview of what BOSS is, what it is hoping to achieve. Is it truly optional? Isn't it a pay cut by another name? And what is government's fallback plan if the BOSS is rejected? We have on the line, first of all, Dr. Greenidge. Kevin Greenidge, good morning. Dr. Greenidge, good morning. Dr. Greenidge, are you there? All right, he was there a second ago, so we will get back to him and make sure he's there. But let me give you an overview in itself while we try to get back Dr. Greenidge. In fact, I'll quote here from what Dr. Greenidge has said. He said, whatever a worker's net salary is after taxes and NAS is taken out, it remains the same. So in other words, it's not a pay cut. And he also makes the point that since BOSS is optional, a worker can determine before he or she is paid that they need cash, and the bonds will be converted to the full salary appears on the bank. He also points out that, given an example, those who earn $36,000 or less would be exempted from this option. So public sector workers earning between $36,000 and $50,000 a year would receive 93% of their salary in cash and 7% in bonds. Those earning $50,000 and $100,000 would actually receive 88% in cash and 12% in bonds. And if you earn in excess of $100,000 per annum, the split would be 83% in cash and 17% in bonds. Dr. Greenidge, are you there again?
Good morning. How are you?
Hi, good. As I said in my opening remarks, what I want to do is to just let you give an overview of what BOSS really is and what it's hoping to achieve. Is it truly optional? Isn't it just a pay cut by another name? And what is government's fallback plan if the boss is rejected?
Okay, Dennis. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome, sir.
Let me begin by giving you an overview of what the BOSS is. As the acronym indicates, it's the Barbados Optional Savings Scheme. Now, what's the whole idea of this? Why now? You've heard, and it's been, we've discussed it before, that because of the onset of COVID, the government is likely to lose as much as 500 million, 450 is our estimate to 500 million in revenues. And at the same time, the government has stepped up its expenditures on capital while repurposing, et cetera, in order to meet the challenges that COVID brings, which includes providing support for households, for businesses, et cetera. So, and within that, government now, the last or the final part of this program, government response, or the most recent response to that, government is also trying to expand its capital work program in order to mop up some of the job losses that has been a result, direct result of COVID. As far as Friday, I think the unemployment claims, the NIS, was about south of 40,000 plus. So there's a lot directly because of COVID. I must tell you, before COVID came, the BERT program was on track. The Barbados Economic Recovery Program was on track. It was delivering what it was designed to deliver. But along came COVID, an external shock, not of any make on Barbados, an external shock, and this is we're responding. So we find ourselves in a scenario where government needs fiscal space. And as we go on, we can talk with different things, fiscal space and financing. Fiscal space, it needs to shift some of its current expenditure. And we look at all our categories of current expenditure, the capital expenditure, so it can expand the capital program, which is good because you soak up jobs, you soak up, you provide employment opportunity for persons, so that when, because we don't know when tourism will return. We don't know when the rest of the world will open up and we'll be able to. But so we don't want the economy to crash in the world. Expanding those areas where we're not directly related to tourism, like fixing government buildings and schools, and roads program, engaging on massive environmental cleanup, those sort of things. So how do we get $100 million in fiscal space moving from current to capital? And so we're looking at UH, with this program designed to achieve two objectives. On one hand, it gives us its fiscal space. On the other hand, it helps us maintain employment in the public sector. A dual, so that by paying workers, giving them the option of receiving part of their salary, the majority, as cash, say 90%, and the other 10% as a bond that they can save and get a return on. It's very simple. On the fiscal, records cash expenditure only. The bond that the worker will hold and make money on or interest return is only recorded as debt. In the future, it becomes an expenditure later, but it's a debt. So that fiscal space, $100 million we're hoping to get, will then, that savings are now being, it can be channeled into the capital program. So that objective will be achieved. And at the same time, there are no loss in jobs. So it's not a salary cut, because a worker gets to take home his same pay, net pay, as he had before the program. If a fellow is to carry home $5,000 and he decides that, yes, I want to be part of this savings program, then let's say, for example, he will get to carry home a large part, let's say $4,500, and the other $500 bond. So he has the same amount of disposable income he had before. He has it mostly in cash and rest in a bond. And then a fellow say, well, look, I just really spend most of my money every month. I really can't afford to put down anything in the bond. I can't take advantage of this opportunity to save. then he gets all his 5,000 in this example. What happens behind the scene, instantaneously and seamlessly, we're working to make sure, is that that bond is immediately cash, changing in cash, and he gets his full 5,000 in bank. So it's truly, it's no risk, and that's very clear. The other thing is not, it is truly optional. What is optional? A fellow can say, a worker, I don't want any bonds. I don't want this. I can't afford to take the opportunity now to save. I need my money cash. It's my money, and I want it now, in cash. He gets that. So that's optional. Now you asked, the last point you asked me was, what happens if it's rejected? Let's define what is rejected. Let's say in the unusual circumstance that every person in the public sector say, I don't want this, which is unusual because we and Barbados have a culture of saving. From the time we were small, we were taught, don't spend everything you get. Save. And right now, there's a dearth. There's an absence of investment and savings opportunity. The only thing you can do is put your money in the bank, and the truth be told, given the rates where they are now, you will come out on the losing end. So I believe most public sector workers, once they fully understand what is being offered and understand the logistics of it, will make an informed decision that if they can save, they will save. But let's do the really extreme scenario that every public sector says they don't want this bond. It has been so cleverly designed in that let's assume there's only one public sector worker. Simplicity, I like to simplify things. One fellow working in public sector, that's a female or male. I said, partner, I don't want no bond. Give me my cash. Let's say they're working for 5,000. Same example. What happens is that at the beginning in July, that person indicates their preference. I choose all cash. I don't want to keep no bond. On the fiscal account, behind the scenes, I keep saying behind the scenes because the worker is not involved in this, it's seamless. Government pays the worker still $4,500 in cash and $5,500 in a bond. At the same time, government issue instructions, send that bond to central bank. This is all before payday. Central bank purchases the bond immediately, sends the cash to the worker's account. So in the worker's account, when he or she checks the account in Broad Street or Credit Union, where they go, they will still see $4,500. And central bank then sells that bond, which is earning interest, to someone else in the private sector, financial institution, a credit union, individual, whoever has their change to save. But on the fiscal side, when you look at what has happened, we still have issued cash, and we are still freed up $500 in savings that can now be channeled in. So the program will work. So the truth be told, there's no restriction. If I tell you that I will still achieve the fiscal objective, the government will still achieve the fiscal objective, even when the worker exercises his choice, then the worker truly have a choice. Because it's not tying us to say that he must want anything. It's an opportunity, not anything being forced on anyone. Dennis, let me stop here in case you got any question. Other question.
Yes. What is a Sanka though?
Sanka.
No, not a problem.
We also talking to Dennis on Friday, so.
Yeah, I know how it is. We have Mr. Harry Haynes as well. He's the president of the credit union, the Cooperative Credit Union League. Mr. Haynes, good morning.
Good morning, Anka.
What do you think of this? Thank you very much for accepting our request to be on this program. What is your take on this, boss? Just an overview, because we're going to get into some questions later. What's your take on it?
All right. First of all, let me thank you for inviting us to be part of the panel. First of all, we have to look at the features of the BOSS program, the Barbados Optimal Savings Scheme. And when we look at the features, we realize that the features are a four-year bond, short-term, 5% interest paid every 6 months, no withholding tax on interest earned. It is fully tradable, and it is guaranteed not to be restructured by the government, and it has an early redemption clause after 24 months. So we represent a large portion of public sector employees. So when we look and examine the BOSS program, as Dr. Greenidge would have alluded to earlier, if a member who is a member of a credit union, he gets home, his take-home pay less taxes is $3,358. And he gets 93% in cash. Loops are amount to about $3,122.94. And he's issued then with a 7% bond at $235.06. So this public service member who's a member of the credit union cannot afford, or because of his current financial situation, whether if he has a loan at the credit union. So for simplicity, if the public worker who's a member of the credit union has a loan of the $235.06, that worker that can take that bond to the credit union, use that bond to pay his loan commitment or mortgage of the $235. So he has not lost any position. He's still in the same position as he was if he had received 100% of his salary in cash. But in doing so, what happens is the credit union will earn interest 5% over the period of the bond. And the way we operate in the credit union, that interest earned acts as part of your revenue. And at the end of the year, the same member who sold the bond to the credit union will still share in the surplus, either by way of dividend or by interest paid. So when we look at it overall, it is a question of options. I think everybody has to examine the proposal and make an informed financial decision as it relates to the bonds. And we have been in consultation with the entire membership, I'm talking about member himself, to make that informed decision, and we will be there to guide and give any information that is necessary.
Can I, if I may paraphrase you, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're basically saying that financially, you don't see a public servant who accepts the bond as being worse off. Is that basically what you're saying?
He would not be worse off if he trades the bond to the credit union and he gets back his cash. So he ends up with the 7% that is in the bond that is converted to cash. So he is still in the same position as he was prior to the bond issue.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Haynes. We're on the same page.
Dennis, Shanta, if I could add to what Mr. Haynes just said. Ali is saying that when that worker decides, he has his choice of saying, I don't want all my salary, or give me the bond. But then he can still go to the credit union and sell his bond. That's even a further choice. Because initially he can say, I don't want the bond up front, and he receives the money in his cash in his credit union account or wherever. So Mr. Haynes is showing, is offering, indicating all the choices that the worker has, mm-hmm. in addition to at the beginning just taking cash and go. Mm-hmm. But the benefit of what Mr. Haynes is saying is that if he says no up front, the government then takes up the bond and sells it off. The additional benefit of the way Mr. Haynes is saying is that if the worker take it himself and take it to the credit union, he, even though he gives up the bond, he gets the benefit because any day the credit union benefits, it returns benefits, its shares increase, and he gets increased dividends. So it's a win-win in that scenario also.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Greenidge. We also have on the line Mr. Tony Marshall, and Mr. Marshall is a retired banker, of course, retired diplomat, and won the most famous, he may say infamous, Brass Tacks moderators over the years. Welcome, Mr. Marshall. Thank you so much for accepting our request for you to be on this program today. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, and thanks. And I would just caution you right off the bat that lawsuits are not banned.
Yes, sir. Just want to get your perspective on the boss plan initially.
Well, firstly, let me start by saying that I have to congratulate the government for a demonstration of creative thinking, innovative thinking, and a clear effort to do two things. One, to satisfy the country, and if one wants to particularize, you can say the public officers. And secondly, to look after the interests of the country. And there I refer to an option that has been raised of printing money. The bond is particularly, I would use the word exciting, in that it carries flexibility. You have flexibility of choice. You have flexibility of use of the bond. And the point that was just made or raised by Dr. Greenidge is that the holder of the bond is not put to any disadvantage. In fact, if anything, there could be an advantage to be had. My reference to it being twofold in serving the interests of the country, in that if the government's overdraft at the central bank is already at its limit, it would have difficulty in avoiding raising finance, however, including the printing of money. And one does not want to promote that exercise because Barbadians would hate to see any change in the parity of the Barbados dollar. So I compliment them in that respect. I would caution, however, that there is a need for expert selling, which Dr. Greenidge has been doing remarkably, because let us face it, confidence is the name of this game. And it is important that the public officers do have that confidence. They can, because they're able to exercise their own choices, and in fact, it can be beneficial, as was used just now in some comment about the mortgage, but there is interest attached to the bonds, and therefore, it can be seen as a compulsory saving, which can be utilized at any time. It is almost like investment paper that carries strips where a civil servant, as I understand it, a public officer, could be willing to accept bonds for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months to meet whatever, and at that time dispose of them to settle whatever liability he has. Now, the sale, presumably, can bring with it either a discount basis or a premium basis, according to his skills and so on, and the people he's dealing with. So, however you look at it, it seems to me to be a very workable project. I think that the fact that the government has chosen to position the interest rate at the level it has will also serve as an indicator. Persons who have monies lying down in the banks, the commercial banks, and for that matter, in the credit unions, not earning 5%, to be interested in acquiring some of these bonds. So I repeat myself, I think it's a commendable effort, and I think it should be complimented.
All right, sir.
Sankar, if I may just interrupt the program for a minute to issue this apology. I'd like to just advise the listening public that we are having some challenges here at Starcom Network. The Barbados Light and Power Company has been working out in the area of liquidation center. There seems to be no power in some areas, and we're also having an issue with flow. I'm not ascribing either of those two works in progress, or if they've ended, to the reason why we're having this. A technical team working to try to shift and restore. We have no stream, and some of our lines are dropping when the calls are made. I think you can hear the interference on Mr. Marshall's line. Lost him twice before I finally got him. So I just want to issue this apology to our listeners who may be having challenges following the program this morning. Hopefully, we'll have the matter rectified as soon as possible. We're also posting a notice on our webpage to ask them to bear with us, please. Back to you, Sankar. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dennis. Now that we've gone through that overview, just let me ask some questions and we can get some this discussion going. And today's Sunday Sun, we have at least three columns dedicated to the whole BOSS program. And one I find pretty interesting is Michelle Russell, the attorney, who raises a number of questions. So I'll ask a couple of questions basically that Ms. Russell raises. Also, on Friday, the Opposition People's Party for Democracy and Development, they also raised a number of issues. They said that the bond is, quote, ill-conceived and illegal. And Senator Caswell Franklin is basically saying that government was in no position to even offer bonds as a form of investment, as a substitute for wages under the Protection of the Wages Act. And Section 3 of that act that he is quoting. Dr. Greenidge, how do you respond to that? It is ill-conceived and illegal, and government is in no position to offer such an investment as a substitute for wages. Dr. Greenidge, are you there?
So on the question of ill-conceived,
but that's opinion. Let's deal with the illegal aspect.
That's more of an opinion, yeah? I don't know. I won't be able to comment on that. I mean, we've been putting out all, I think the key here is communication. We've been putting out all the information. Anyone can take the analysis and draw their own conclusion of whether it was ill-conceived. For me, I think it represents the collective ingenuity of the Barbadian economic team. Now, on the terms of it, on the legality of it in terms of wage, that is not my expert area. Mm-hmm. I stay in my lane. The person asking that question will have to refer to the government's legal people. But let me say this, Shankar. Bonds are not new. Were not invented by Barbadians or by the Barbadian government, This is something internationally everybody knows. Bonds have been used as a form of savings all over the world. And we in Barbados have been issuing bonds, particularly savings bonds, for quite a time now. So the legality of the bonds are fine. On the issue of where you can get compensation and bonds and cash, two things I will say. This is not an illegal view, just two things. Private sector companies offer person shares, CEOs, etc., opportunity to save their money or invest in the company. I say akin to this. Secondly, if I, as a worker, have some change to save, I would, the question of legality, and I'm not saying that it's not, that is something I'm sure is perfectly legal. But in terms of, I am more concerned, do I get opportunity to save some money? There's no vehicle that you can put some savings in. And therefore, I think this is a unless otherwise proven, this is a great opportunity for anyone that can see it. And for those who can't afford to see it because they're cash strapped at the moment, they have options to opt out and later opt back in. So that's my take on that one.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask another question from the PDP. How, in the name of sound economics, will this plan fuel growth?
Right. It's quite simple, Shankar. What drives growth in any economy is investment in capital work, whether it be government or private sector. When you build hotels and roads and schools, that fuels investment. Listen, in many countries, African countries, anywhere, you just need to build a road connecting two rural communities, for example, and you see how fast trading start. People start selling, hawkers come and start. You can transit your products from one. What grows an economy faster is investment in capital. So in this environment we are in now, where we got hit by a COVID, and we're talking double-digit projected decline in economic growth, in times that we've never seen in the history. Even in 9/11, we didn't see this sort of decline. So we have to get something going. We just can't sit down and wait for tourism to return. Yes, you plan for it, and that is why you see the $200 million tourism facility that allowed hoteliers, et cetera, to refurbish, get their product ready so we hit the ground running once the world opens. But I mean, well, what do? You got to get something going. So the fastest way, and I'm not going to necessarily, I'm not here to debate or teach anyone about economics, but capital expenditure, that they can go to the IMF website. I have a paper there also with College on Investment and Material Department. But any website or any place, just Google it. Capital expenditure by government has a much larger impact on economic growth than current expenditure. So much so that you can get 25 times the propeller. The multiplier effect is 25 times if you spend capital than expenditure. Think about it this way. If government gives someone $100, that person, their $100, they're going to spend it to buy some food and goods. If government take that $100 and build, let's say it can build something, more than one person take part in it. People can start a shop, start to sell some stuff, do something. So capital. So when we shift, when we create space and shift between current expenditure and capital, we are indeed accelerating growth by expenditure. And then if you're allowing me, because I don't want to be talking, if you allow me to make one thing clear. I've heard a lot of talk about printing money. Why you just don't go and print some money? Why it? Dennis, there's a difference, not Dennis, I mean Shankar, there's a difference, right, between fiscal space and financing requirements. To make it clear, financing, when government need money to do things. But fiscal space is different between what you can do within your fiscal target. Now, recall, prior to this work program, the fiscal used to average a 7.5% deficit over many years, which is one reason why we accumulated debt. Within the work program, we have bring the fiscal to a sustainable position. We have moved away from $1.9 billion to just over $200 million, and we made it current on our payment. We reduce debt from 176 to 180 and keep it on a debt downward trajectory. When you fix your systems like that, you fix your fiscal, and you get a shot, you don't want to destroy your fiscal because you will not be in position to take advantage of the opportunities when the world opens back up. So that fiscal space, which is you have your revenues and your expenditure, you need to manage carefully. So, like, put it this way. Imagine a room and have all your stuff in there, a room full of all your groceries, for example. You have all the money in the world outside the room, all the money in the world. That's your financing. But you can only spend what can be fit into the room. So for you to spend more on one item in your room, your capital, you need to save something on another item in the room, your wages, your transfers or something. So you're shifting within the space in order to maintain your fiscal prudence, so to speak. You understand? If now we want to expand the fiscal, that's a different story. I have to do that prudently. But at the end of the day, so I don't know, and for those, if you think that government to to give you some confidence that government is not trapped for cash. Last Central Bank report, we get the report, our reserves is $1.7 billion right now. Government deposit at a central bank, I don't know the exact thing, but a couple hundred million dollars in deposits government has. It is not a matter of financing, and I don't want to go into economics again. It's a matter of space, monitoring what you do. And we even create additional space in consultation with the IMF, eh? Because under the BERT program, we were running primary balances. 6%. And the reason we're running that is all to pay down. That goes to pay down our debt. But the Prime Minister says, you can pay down debt at a slow rate. We negotiate with the IMF that instead of 6%, we can do 1% initially, and maybe might even have to fall to zero, a balance. But that additional space gives us the ability to respond in the loss of $500 million in revenues. Summary, it's not an issue of printing money will not solve what we are trying to do now. Printing money is for a different purpose. And we in printing, under this BERT program, is not an issue of printing money. Because that, in itself, printing money, you take money that is not backed by anything. It wasn't come from any earnings, any productive activity. You put in the economy, in any day, you will lose reserve. The history between 2008 and 2017 showed us that. Without going to that. So you want to use money that is coming from something. And that is what this program does. The savings go into capital.
All right, Dr. Greenidge. We got a number of calls, people on the line. So what we'll do is we'll come back to that after this commercial from our sponsors, because this who have brought this program every week for a number of years, that is Williams Industries, Inc.